Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again on Halloween is Shay Dixon. Shay, how you doing?
Got my black on three gear on for Halloween. I don't have a costume. No costume.
Yeah, no costume. I'm actually, all I have is the decor right there that I bought last year, and that's it. I thankfully,
if you're not watching on YouTube right now, it's got a spooky goblin pumpkin of some
pumpkin
sort
head thing. Yeah,
ghost. Keep that up there year round, do you?
No, I just put it up like 2 days ago. Actually, I remembered I had it. Because I bought it last year at Walmart, and it was like super cheap, and I was like, you know what, let's just have it. So I had it last year during Thanksgiving, and I was like, or Thanksgiving, Halloween, and I had it in the closet. So there you go. So yes, I am decked out in ready for Halloween.
Not having a good Halloween, Brian Harsin.
Yeah, yes. Not having good Halloween at all. Quickly.
Thoughts?
They hired Auburn hired, I believe the last name is Cohen, the athletic director from Mississippi State, hired him, and it looked like his first move was to get rid of Harsin. And it's something we all knew was coming eventually. But for, another SEC West school, I think it's good for us to give our initial thoughts on it. But yeah, my initial thoughts were it's about time. Like I wasn't sure if they were going to go the whole season, but it didn't really make sense. It felt like that fumble against the Missouri fumble really saved him another couple weeks there. So at the end of the day, they're going to be big game hunting again, just like LSU was last year. Obviously, the perception of Auburn's gone down, but we forget, or at least I forget, that outside of the Cam Newton year, 2010, they made it back to a championship game in 2013, and they were really competitive 2017. So they're going to be, going for big dogs. They're, are a top 25, top 20 program in the country at the very least. And it's going to be interesting to see who they get, because it's a good job.
Did we ever think this was going to work?
No.
And I'm not just saying because he's from Boise. That plays a role in it. Like, look, Brian Kelly, people want to talk about culture fit with Brian Kelly coming from Notre Dame to LSU into the SEC for the first time. He had been a head coach for more than 30 years at the D2 level, at the Group of Five level, at a higher Group of Five level, and then at Notre Dame, obviously. So there was a lot of experience that came with that. Harsin was I think he was at Boise State for like 6 years.
Yeah, I was going to say 5 years.
Yeah, 1 year before that at Arkansas State. So I don't know. It just seemed like Auburn deep pockets could figure out a coach that was more of a fit for that job. I don't think they won't take that risk again. I'll say that they're going to hire someone, whether it's Lane Kiffin or someone of that nature who has some familiarity with the SEC. That's one thing I feel good about saying is I bet who they hire knows the lay of the land in the SEC, especially hiring Cohen away from Miss State. So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's like every other thing at Auburn. The boosters will decide ultimately who comes and goes, and that's the extent of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like you said, especially with Cohen there, and then with Harsin not working out, you see a lot of times them go in opposite directions when it comes to hiring coaches. Well, like, this didn't work, so we'll go this way, and while I think, Kiffin and Freeze.
Hugh Freeze is getting tossed around.
Yeah, those names are going to get tossed around continuously. I'm interested to see how it works out, because this is going to be his first hire, and after the buyouts of Malzahn and now Harsin back to back, you can't really miss on this. That you have to have this guy has to have a little bit of leeway, you would think, to where you're not just shelling out $50 million buyouts every 3 years. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
it's crazy, but
tough times on the planet. Hey, we said this before the year. We said they'll be the worst team in the West. Yeah. So it's only a matter of time before they pulled the plug here on Harsin. And as you said, they operated without an AD for this entire stretch. Now they name one, and day one on the job is let's go ahead and clean house here.
Like 20 minutes in, he's like, all right. That was definitely in the interviews. He was like,
I've seen enough. Don't worry.
He's gone. He's gone. So, yeah, we just wanted to give you our initial thoughts on the Auburn firing there, because we don't have a ton of questions here. Coming off a bye week, there's not as much to talk about as far as questions go, but we did ask for questions on our board as we do every Sunday.
Did we get any rants? Usually we've got some rants.
We didn't get any rants. We did.
Unless you put a question mark at the end of it, it doesn't count.
We did get a nice, I don't know how many words this is, from Silver Moon at the end, where he gave us a bunch of stats with Bryce Young, you know, just before he asked his question. So
I know how I'll respond to that one.
Looking forward to that question. But yeah, we have a good amount of questions, so let's get into them now. A lot of them are about the Alabama game, obviously coming up this week, which we will preview more on the site. And real quick, we will have the recruiting podcast also out this week. So I'm ready for you and Billy.
That'll Billy's be a busy one. Take on that. Oh gosh,
I can't wait. Can't wait. All right. First question. Mr. Virgo asked, how do you feel the team's confidence is heading into this weekend's game? I mean, confidence is, I feel like it would be at an all time high at this point. I obviously coming off of what they've done. I mean, we got this question asked after the Florida game and I felt good about their confidence. Now you just beat Ole Miss at home. And you're going into a bye and then come back and play at home. I think the home field advantage, which I think there's a question about it later on, I think it's an interesting thing because it's not just like obviously the fans are involved and all the, you know, fundamental ways that a home field advantage works. But I think just playing from a confidence standpoint, if you just played at home, you just played a great game, your best game of the season against Ole Miss, and now you're playing at home again. And just from a mental standpoint, I would think that would be comforting. So, yeah, I think the confidence is really high with this team at this moment.
I think that I agree with you. I bet that they wish they didn't have a bye. We talked about that on the prior podcast. I think maybe after the game that you were rolling in back-to-back games, really rolling against Ole Miss, and it was suddenly like, hey, it'd be nice if the next game were up next weekend and you could just carry this momentum through. Now, we'll see how they come out on that front. I would say confident is fine. I'd say they're, for me, who's covered a lot of LSU-Bama series, I mean, a lot of them, like more than 15. I'd say this team, I get the sense they're really within the whole program, there's a lack of pressure that might usually come with this game. And it's funny to say that considered that the winner of this game with three games left, two SEC games left, will control its own destiny to win the West and go to the championship. So it'd be odd to say they weren't feeling this immense amount of pressure, but I almost feel like, because of how they started, because of this ongoing rhetoric that LSU wasn't supposed to be that good this year, that they've ended up taking lumps while also putting themselves in a spot where they've started to get better and better and are 6-2 now. And it's almost like, as you noted, being at home, that the pressure's on Bama here. Like LSU is slowly 100%. Crept up in the rankings to where, you look up and it's like, ooh, this is 15 versus 6. Well, in LSU's mind, I don't think the players even think about the ranking. I think they think of it in terms of, hey, we got waxed against Tennessee when we thought we had hit a little bit of a stride, and they regrouped, got off the mat, and went and put out arguably their two best wins so far. That gives you confidence. I think their confidence is rooted in just how they've played recently, more so than anything to do with them moving up in the rankings or them having a chance to win the West or anything like that. Like I think Brian Kelly, and he said it today, their focus this week isn't going to be drumming up this we're playing Bama. It's going to be here's X, Y, and Z of what we got to do. And if we're executing, that's what's going to give us the best shot to beat them.
I real quick want to bounce back to your point, which I thought was a great point, is that Alabama to me has immensely more pressure than LSU does, because if Alabama loses this game, they're out of the playoffs. Like they're out. They're not going to make it. I mean, if they made the SEC championship and won and beat, let's say, Georgia in the SEC championship game, two losses.
Well, they wouldn't make the SEC championship if they lose this game.
That's true. I mean, I'm saying best case scenario for them would be, you know, LSU somehow loses, both of those games, something like
that. They beat Ole Miss next week, and then they.
But basically, Alabama, if they lose this game, is out of the playoffs, which is huge, obviously, for Nick Saban and this team. They can't mess up anymore. And this, to this point, would be their biggest, would be their best win of the year. A road win at LSU would be their best win. I know they had a road win against Texas early on, but I mean, they didn't even look great in that. This would be their best win of the year to this point. So it's there's a lot of pressure on Alabama coming into this game. And I feel the same way you do. I think this team, this LSU team, is playing with some house money.
Yeah. Oh, of course. And that's a good way to put it, because the reality remains LSU has looked good the past couple of weeks. I don't think there's a sense of irritation from like anyone who would put pressure onto this program, fans, national media. I don't think there's any expectation that LSU is going to go out and beat Bama. I would think that the expectation is Bama is the better team and is going to win the game. They're favored by like what, double digits opening up. So
13 now.
On the road. So you're almost a 2-touchdown favorite, basically, playing a team like this. The expectation is Bama's going to win. And if that's the case and they do, LSU still knows, yes, then you got Arkansas, you got UAB, you got A&M. You win those three games, you're 9-3. You get to go to a big bowl game. If you win that, you're a 10-win team, and you're one of the Brian Kelly era, which was set at 6.5 wins. I mean, people were getting it at 6.5, 7 wins as the over-under. They're at 6 already. So, yeah, I don't think there's – for the first time in a long time, and I think it's just because of those factors of going through a coaching change and so much of this team being new and them actually having early success, is I don't sense that LSU feels pressure here.
Yeah. I agree 100%. Appreciate the question. Tiger Ranch with the next one says, do we mostly run tempo on offense or not? Seems our offense's rhythm is better in tempo. I did a story on that. When was that? I don't know. Thursday. I think it was Wednesday, Thursday or something. Looking at the tempo and the pace of play that they had, and looking at Brian Kelly's quote from last Tuesday's press conference, where I thought it was interesting, where he said, basically, for them, tempo is not about just constantly playing fast, getting the snaps off, you know, within 10 seconds or whatever. It's about being flexible. And I think that's a really, really smart way of looking at it, because I hadn't even looked at it that way before, where you can dictate, you can go fast whenever the defense is on its heels, and then you can slow it down whenever you need to. And that's a luxury a lot of teams don't have. A lot of teams like that just, you know, can't move the ball, obviously can't play fast. And if, like Ohio State has that luxury too. They pick their spots really well. So I think a lot of fans are enamored by Tennessee and Ole Miss and watching them just get on the ball and snap it. And Ole Miss and LSU is not playing slow, but they're more towards the middle of the country. But I think that flexibility is way more important than just going.
I like the answer. And I do. I think one part we'll see more of is the RPO game. I think that's something they'll get. That it's clear Jaden's got a better grip on, and the offense has a better grip on right now as compared to where they were before.
Yeah. Next question is NolaFan33. I wouldn't say either are playing poorly, but the LSU cornerback room and the Bama wide receiver room seem a bit down this year versus where they are typically. How do you feel about that matchup? And then he has a second question. Also, what do you think Denbrock can take away from this matchup with LSU, with Alabama last season, or is the personnel just too different? I mean, the cornerback room at LSU is obviously filled with transfers. We've talked about that numerous times on this podcast. The Bama receiver room also has some transfers, Jermaine Burton and guys like that. Neither one is star study. You're not going to get the 2019 game out there by any means on Saturday, but I think it opens the door up for an interesting offense versus defense matchup, which I'll look at more throughout the week. But yeah, it definitely changes the complexion of this game. It's not going to be as a NFL, you know, pro style type spread type stuff.
No, if this were Devonta Smith and Waddle and Judy and all those guys, I'd feel different about their chances with Bryce Young sitting back there and those guys running all over the field. But yeah, it's a good point, actually, that both rooms, Bama wide receiver, LSU corner, don't look like they normally would. Whether that's a kind of transfer situations or kind of just that's where they're at with guys departing. But it does. That'll be something to keep an eye on Saturday. Not the normal look for either team there. And what the other one was what? Can Denbrock take anything away from like the Cincy-Bama game last year?
Yes, I'm assuming. Yeah, I'm assuming that's what he meant. I'm assuming he didn't mean LSU-Alabama last year.
Well, I mean, you did so much film study on this. Do you think that what LSU's running this year is similar to what Cincy ran last year?
To a degree, I think he kind of hit it at the end. I think the personnel is just too different. Last year, Cincinnati just had no shot at slowing down Alabama or scoring on Alabama at all with that team. And so you hope from a receiver standpoint, LSU's receivers, you know, Neighbors, Boutte, and guys like that can all have really good games because obviously the LSU receiver.
Brian Thomas.
Yes, Brian and guys like that. Because obviously the LSU receiver room is far, far more talented than the Cincinnati room. So you're interested to see how Denbrock uses that against an Alabama secondary that we talked about has been beat up this year at times. Hendon Hooker threw all over him. Quinn Ewers threw all over him before he got hurt. So that's going to be the interesting thing is how he plays Alabama this year with far more wide receiver talent. All right, let's see what else we got here. Grapes Wishaw?
Get your street cred game up there. That's definitely Grape Swisha.
Grape Swisha. There we go.
Or Swisher.
Grape Swisha.
Even with the A.
Do you see JD having success against a defense not named Ole Miss or Florida? With that being said, how would you compare the Alabama defense to some defense we've already seen? Will Alabama be the best defense we've seen so far? Do you want to take this one first? Do you see Jaden Daniels having success against a defense not named?
Yeah, I'll take the first part. I think if you look at what he's done this year, which outside of the bubble that we're all in right here in Baton Rouge and kind of criticizing every little detail or praising every big moment, people are calling Daniels the most improved quarterback in the country from the start of the season to now. And certainly looks a lot better than he ever did at Arizona State. And I'm not saying look bad then, but it's just very clear he's in a rhythm right now. And starting to put up big, 200 plus pass yard games became 300 plus yard pass games against Tennessee and Florida and what 250 against Ole Miss. So a lot of touchdowns in there. And then we're obviously seeing him put the run together. So, yeah, I think he's trending in the right way. I think you also look at Auburn was the worst game.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But beyond that, State, he played well enough for them to win comfortably, and that wouldn't even have been one of his better games. Like, still, most of these games he's sitting 75, 71, 71, 74 completion range percentage. So, if you can be that while also, like, he's been that at the beginning when he was doing a lot of check down stuff and all that, it was sufficient, but it wasn't getting them far. Now it's clear he's trusting his receivers, he's going downfield a ton. And he's seeing that the completions, the turnovers, all that remains the same. It's just now you're putting together more touchdowns and more yardage in the passing game. So, yeah, I think on the track he's on, he's going to continue to put up big numbers.
Yeah, they have Arkansas next week whose secondary is not good at this point because of injuries and transfers and whatnot. And then they have UAB, who I think they'll be fine against. And then you have A&M. So, even after this, I think he'll continue to improve and look fine. The big thing I'm interested in to kind of go in a different direction here is to see how he runs against Alabama, because Will Anderson and Dallas Turner are on that defensive line. You have Henry Toto at linebacker. They're coming off a bye week. Alabama is going to probably be looking to stop the run or to stop his run specifically and make him hit those throws, which we've talked about before. He's gotten a lot better at throwing the ball as the season's gone on, but still I would think if you're Alabama, you're trying to get to him and make him flush him out the pocket and just turn him into a runner and just try to spy him and limit what he can do there. So that's going to be a real interesting aspect of it, is can he run the ball effectively against Alabama, because it's a huge part of his game and this entire offense. So,
you ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Let's see. What do we got next here? True asked, seems to be the worst. This is the worst group of receivers Bama's had in years. How do you like the secondary matching up? I got to watch the film a little bit more. I want to do on Wednesday a big look at the game. But in theory, it's more about what Denbrock can scheme and if the offensive line can protect long enough. So that's what I'll say for that. Because, yeah, they'll be able to have some checkdowns and, like, some shorter route stuff. But if they can't block Turner and Anderson, then it's not going to matter. So.
I mean, if Burton's on the field, he's good. And they've really kind of been almost like LSU in the sense of, like, it's just a multi-man attack. I mean, you've got Ja'Cory Brooks is probably the best guy, or at least most productive.
I had that flipped in my head. I realized I had that flipped. I was looking at LSU's receiver against Bama's corners. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Remix. Holden's been really good. Ja'Cory Brooks has been really good. Jermaine Burton's been good, really good when he's out
and
there.
Latu at tight end, all right.
Yeah, Kobe Prentice. Then you got Latu at tight end. I do know this. I was looking over their stats over the weekend. I think Jahmyr Gibbs, who's obviously a monster running back, LSU recruited him heavily. People who follow recruiting will remember that. He went to Georgia Tech and then transferred to Bama. Beast running back, but I also want to say he was – leading the team in catches and was like 31. Up there in receiving yards and touchdowns. So, like, this will also be a game. It's not just wide receivers matching up on corners, but how they handle Latu at tight end and how they handle Gibbs out of the backfield catching the football, because Bryce Young can find him and you can't give him much room. Yep. I'll make you pay.
Yeah, exactly. All right. You want to talk? Let's see. Gochel asked about the 2024 quarterback recruitment. If you think they'll have one committed by December, but I don't know if you want to talk about that on here or not.
Let's see the exact question.
Go ahead. Is LSU's 2024 quarterback recruit committed by December?
I don't know. It might be Julian saying, but we'll see. I feel good about it, but I'm not going to say 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Is there a spot on roster where LSU has an advantage versus Bama? I think the wide receivers versus their DBs can win for sure. Bama's got a couple good DBs. I'm not sure.
I mean, the hope is that B.J. Ojulari obviously has a big game, and Harold Perkins would have a big game wherever they put him in. Tyler Steen's been really good for Alabama this year, but other than that, they've been kind of a little more inconsistent than they have been in years past up front. So maybe that's something that LSU can attack with Ojulari and Perkins and Wingo, who obviously had a great game last time. So that's an area if you want to look outside of – we've talked receivers and DBs this whole podcast. If you want to look outside of that, I think potentially LSU's defensive line could be an advantage.
Yeah, we should have Mason Smith in this one, but Mekhi Wingo's been – really, really good for him. And they said thoughts on Will Anderson versus the two true freshmen, meaning Emory Jones and Will Campbell at the tackle spots. Brian Kelly talked about that today. He was just like, look, we're going to have to call a lot of different things, whether it's getting it out quickly or whether it's, you know, finding ways. Josh Williams has been massive for them. They've praised him for how much he's helped in the run game, or excuse me, as a running back in protection and things like that. So I'm assuming this is a day where they're obviously game planning, knowing you've got talent like that at Bama on the edges, but they've also faced not Will Anderson level, but faced some really good SEC edge rushers and then to Florida State. And I think they've realized guys like Josh Williams can help them out a lot in some spots there.
Yeah. I mean, he said Williams is going to stay in. He said they would max protect at times. I mean, you have not just Will Anderson, but Dallas Turner on the other side too. So it's a handful, but I still believe in Campbell at least. I think Campbell has had a much better year than Emory Jones. And again, this isn't saying anything. I think Emory Jones can be really good, but I think Campbell will be able to hold his own for the most part. But, you know, the other side, I think they're going to have to chip on and keep, whether it's Cole Taylor, Mason Taylor, whoever else in. So that's definitely a point that I'm going to be looking forward to watching here. Hybrid Theory asks, does Harold Perkins finally play on the first series of the game?
I don't know.
I don't have any answer to that one. If they're in base
or not. He's going to play a lot. I mean, Brian Kelly said today, too, that this is a game where all your best players have to be on the field. And I think that he was talking a little bit about Harold Perkins.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Kelly's Hero asked, will Besh and or Dellinger be available for Saturday? If Dellinger is available, do you think he will return to his starting role? You had the injury report up, so I'll let you.
Yeah. Besh has been at practice since he muffed that punt against Florida and got hit on that play. But they said this week, so he'll play. Not sure if he's returning punts. Greg Clayton was back there in his absence and didn't really give you any reason to want to bail on that, but we'll see. But available to play receiver, obviously, and he'll be on the field. Dellinger sounded more, it's like day to day, but they said like, yeah, he's already got a broken hand or that they had surgery on. So he said that's still in a soft cast, but they said the worry is the knee, grade 2 MCL sprain a few weeks back. And they felt like he'd be ready for this game, but Brian Kelly said this week will be his first week of like full practice. So they really don't know how his knee is going to handle it until he goes through a week of practice or at least a few of them. So maybe later in the week, we'll know an update there. And then Major Burns is back and good to go. And it sounds like Emery's going to practice today, but he's more in that day-to-day camp of where he probably didn't do anything since the Ole Miss game in terms of getting on the leg, or I guess he said it was an Achilles injury, but day-to-day.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting to see if Dellinger can play or not. That's good. That would be a big boost, but I thought the offensive line played a really good game against Ole Miss. So I'm not, you know, discounting them if he can't play. So Holy Bull asked, what do you do to counter Will Anderson with true freshman offensive tackles? We talked about that a bit. I think another thing that I'm interested in is if LSU can establish the run or not. Because obviously that's something you always hear from coaches. If you can run the ball, it maybe slows down the opposing edge rushers. You don't want to get into obvious passing situations. And I'm interested to see how much Alabama spies with whether it's a defensive lineman or a linebacker. So all that being said, it would be nice for them to be able to run the ball.
Yep, I'd say you summed it up. Run the football and then, as Brian Kelly said today, when they're in situations – like that, they're going to max protect, or they're going to have Josh Williams in and have him chip on a guy. So about how they've handled it so far, I'd say.
Yeah.
And I think, look, Jane Daniels is at the point where he's 30 something games into starts into his career and is playing his most confident football. Like, I think he's beginning to feel where that comes from a bit more. And one benefit of that is how do you get away from two incredibly talented edge rushers, have a quarterback that will tuck it and run it. And
yes.
Get you a few extra yards instead of getting sacked for 7.
Yep, for sure. All right. You want to read off the Silver Moon question?
I'm not reading off all this. Go to the board and check out Silver Moon because he just
appreciate
said
all the stats, man.
He presents some notable stats, which obviously did some good work here. Yes. But let's just read this. He said, on the average of the 6 games that he listed all these stats for, LSU versus Bama would need to generate 2 to 3 sacks, 6 to 7 tackles for loss, 4 PBUs, 5 hurries, essentially really have the game of the year in terms of tackles for loss, get Bryce Young to the ground a couple of times and hurry him a few more times. I said in the loss against Tennessee this year for LSU, they had 0 sacks, 2 tackles for loss, 1 pass breakup, 1 QB hurry. That actually didn't even have a question. That was just presented those stats. Who's the most important player on LSU's defense? But that really didn't have anything to do with all the stats.
Do you think stats speak volumes?
If you can have an all-world day on defense, you've got a shot.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you think they can hit? How many of those can they hit? I think you would, you know, ideally you can hit 2 to 3 sacks. The tackles for loss is going to be tough because a lot of those will be run stops against a Jahmyr Gibbs, who I think is really, really talented, and they have a really good running scheme for the most part. 4 pass breakups is whatever, you know, that comes with incompletions for the most part. Hurries is going to be interesting because Bryce Young is so elusive, can extend the play for so long. Mm-hmm. It's going to – look, the first few drives of that Auburn game had me very, very concerned for quarterbacks extending plays against LSU. And Jordan Travis also extended plays to a degree against LSU. So they're going to have a really, really good game in the back end of staying disciplined, staying attached, and not losing their eyes whenever Bryce Young is being a magician.
And I would say, too, I could hear people, but Shea, we had these stats just a week ago probably. I mean, I could go look them up, but that's probably what they were against Ole Miss. And it's sort of the bell went off, right, for other fans that, oh, the way to stop Ole Miss and Jackson Dart is to do what Matt House did, just start sending pressure after him, and he was collapsing. Bryce Young is a lot better than Jackson Dart. So even when you're sending guys, as you said, he's good enough to get the ball out of his hands or run and do something with it. He's not going to sit back there and just get sacked like Jackson Dart did.
No, it's – yeah, Bryce Young is – yeah. The Rainier
different beast.
Different.
Bourbon and Cheerios, other than the crowd, where does LSU have the advantage Saturday night?
I think
mind you, they're double-digit underdogs. So yeah. Even find me an advantage that you would say LSU has over Alabama. And you haven't dove into the Alabama film. I'm sure if you did, something would jump out where you'd say LSU's better than Bama at this.
Yeah. Yeah, all I did today, I wrote out a kind of overlooking piece at Alabama where I think it was interesting. I think it did all right on the board as far as getting people interested in it. So yeah, I will look into that. I think we did it just from a general perspective. I think we did a good job hitting on the approach of the game and playing with house money and not feeling that pressure. If LSU can get off to a not slow start, I don't see why they can't hang in there. You know, the spread's 13 and it's going down. I really think that they are going to have a chance to hang in the game. If they just don't go down 10-0 in the first 5 minutes of the game. That's all I ask. That's the standard. If they do that, they might get blown out. But like, you can't do that against good teams. We saw that against Tennessee. Like, you can't do that. So it's going to be real interesting to see how that plays out.
I was just trying to click through the college football stat pages for the SEC on every category I could on the team category to just give you one where LSU is above Bama, but I clicked on about 12 and I haven't gotten anything yet.
Again, you hope the Alabama receivers who aren't as dynamic as Devontae Smith. Oh, here we go.
Time of possession by about a minute a game.
What I was going to say, the stat that every football coach says is meaningless. We got it. LSU, time of possession. Place your bets now. Who wins the time of possession? LSU. But yeah, I mean, the turnovers.
Oh, you know what? I can find one.
LSU doesn't really turn the ball over if it's not on special teams. So that's, I think, a positive. We saw that against Ole Miss.
Okay. You ready for it?
Yes.
Any Alabama fan who dares listen to this podcast has already been screaming the answer at me. Bama is one of the most penalized teams in the SEC. LSU is not. Yeah. So, well, they're not far off, but they're not as bad. They're not as penalized as Bama. Not as penalized as Bama, which has been an Achilles heel for the Bama team this year, is that maybe more so than any time I can remember, they shoot themselves in the foot so much. They've had games this year that were close that should not have been close.
Yeah. A&M game was interesting.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of instances where Alabama, or three instances this year, where Alabama has not looked dominant by any means. Texas A&M, and Tennessee. So if you're an LSU fan, go watch those
offense
three games.
Offense looked dominant against Tennessee.
Yeah, the offense looked great against Tennessee. Bryce Young looked terrific against Tennessee. But if you're an LSU fan and you want some hope, just go watch those three games. Or if you really want hope, that first quarter against Texas where Quinn Ewers was in the game, Texas looked better than Alabama, which is crazy to say. But
well, then you're going to need Jaden Daniels and LSU to look like
exactly
Quinn Ewers in Texas and
Hendon Hooker.
And Hendon Hooker in Tennessee. So okay. That's
the deal. So there you
go. Standard. There it is.
Let's see if I have anything else here. I don't think so. I was going to ask you what your favorite Halloween candy is.
Yeah, Tiger Ranch asked about Mason Smith update. Surgery's done. Still full recovery expected. We haven't gotten a public update from Brian Kelly, but if you watch the LSU videos they put out, like after games or whatever, there was one video of them in the locker room dancing after Ole Miss, and Mason in no crutches or boot or any of that was in the middle of the dance group dancing with the team after the game. So I'm sure he's on the path to recovery, and it's very clear that their medical staff is kind of all in on, and they did a hamstring surgery on the starting running back and got him back like in rapid pace. So
I think world record time.
Yeah. So I think he'll probably be just fine. I don't know. What'd you have for me? Is that it?
I asked what your favorite Halloween candy is.
Well, I mean, I'm a grown adult, so I really can buy candy whenever I want. And I would say Reese's are my favorite. And Butterfingers would be my other favorite chocolate candy.
I've never been a huge peanut butter and chocolate combination guy, honestly. So I just roll with Kit Kats for the most part and like basic chocolate.
And what do Kit Kats have? Caramel? They don't have peanut butter?
No, no. It's like a chocolate.
Okay, so Kit Kat.
It doesn't have peanut butter in it. That's all I know.
Okay.
I'm not rolling with the peanut butter in there. But all right, that's all we have for y'all today. We appreciate all the questions. If y'all are interested in it and supporting me, I need 39 points from Joe Burrow tonight to win my fantasy league. So let's go, Joey B. Big game.
Prayers up.
Big game for Joey B tonight. Calling it.
It's a rivalry game.
Yeah. So we'll see. Without Chase out there, you know, get some Higgins and stuff like that going. But that's all right. We'll see how it goes. But
hey, North Texas got to win. You're fine.
Man, what a North Texas got to win.
SMU got to win.
SMU got to win. It's good vibes.
It's not on the pod.
It's good vibes all around. Good vibes all around on the Bengal Tiger podcast and platform. So yeah, if y'all haven't already, let me get my hat. I got
it.
Still got the Bengal Tiger Founder Club, a hat, $1 for a year. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you have not already. We appreciate all of the support and the growth on the channel as we are now 2 months in almost exactly to joining the site, Shay. So it's been a fun ride so far. We appreciate y'all for joining us, and we will talk to y'all later.